Hi,
And we're
Kelvin.
back on it.
Yeah, wonderful. We just had the connection crash on us while we were talking about the experiments of Dean Radin and his use of the single and double slit experiment of Young. Basically, the idea is to have a photon go through one slit or two slits and then see what the result is. You already said that's a standard interferometer. And
yeah.
I was just trying to explain that he's doing the clever stuff here because he uses basically the relationship between one dimension and two dimensions, which is as good as you can get to sort of try to look through the keyhole to see the whole room around it behind it. If you want to detect a hologram which is moving, then of course you need to find a way to do that. And as you already said, in a measurement like this, when you measure a human in the environment, basically a living being amongst living beings on Earth, a living being, then you're bound to run into some trickiness on how you can set up that experimentation.
Absolutely.
And the reason that I asked you to comment on the use of the single and double slit experiment is because you already explained that in tetrionics you have this nifty way of understanding what happens when something goes through that single double slit. You already mentioned while the crash sort of blocked the communication, thus this would be a very elaborate topic to get into. And I asked you to, in preparation, sort of give the brief idea of it so that Dean Radin and the others can already sort of have an idea of what will be described later on.
Yeah, for sure. In essence, what we'll do in the full-blown discussion on it, it'll probably be a couple of discussions, is that we'll show via tetrionic geometries how a photon is two bosons back to back, two equilateral triangles making a diamond shape. That's the essence, the material. Well, it's not even material, it's the physical essence of electromagnetic fields. EM waves are just the same geometry full of photons. We'll go through that, but what it shows us, and this is where it really needs to be discussed in depth and carefully, but I'll try and summarize it here. What you have to do is have your mind retrained somewhat. You have to get away from the Young's idea of spherical waves creating the interference patterns, because what's actually occurring is there's a twofold process, which is what leads to this wave-particle duality problem. We have the equilateral, let's just call them diamond-shaped photons. They have two electric fields, a positive and a negative, which makes them neutral. And we have two more diamonds, which are the magnetic dipole in the center of the photon. As that diamond travels towards the detector or the photographic paper, whatever it is, or through the slit, makes no difference. It's the physical diamond electric and magnetic fields and their position to each other, as in the electric leads the magnetic, which is then trailed by an electric. As that passes through the detector or through the slit or onto the detector or the photographic paper, those the first field that's encountered is the electric, which changes in width geometrically, which is interpreted in the photo detectors or on the photo papers as an increase in electric field intensity. As that electric field geometry reduces, the intensity reduces to the point where the magnetic field begins to build up. As the electric's reducing, the magnetic's increasing. When the magnetic reaches its maximum and starts to decrease, the electric starts to build up. So you have this geometric interplay and relationship. It's a phase relationship. It's an intensity relationship inherent in the geometry. As the geometry changes, we measure it electrically or photographically as a changing sine wave that's increasing and decreasing. It has phase relationships. The other component of that diamond shape, as I said, EM waves are comprised of self-similar shape photons. That is, diamond EM waves have diamond-shaped photons within them. Now, the distribution of photons in those diamond-shaped EM waves is a normal Gaussian statistical probability distribution. It goes from 1 to the maximum intensity of the wave back down to 1 again. So if it was an amplitude of 9, for example, it would go, looking across the wave, you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 at the medium bisector, at the linear momenta, and then it would taper back down, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'll discuss all this in more detail later on. But the geometric shape, physical shape of photons and within EM waves creates the amplitudes and the phase relationships, and then the distribution of photons, geometric distribution within the EM wave, creates the statistical probabilities and creates the diffraction interference patterns that we so often see, that were historically interpreted by Young to be the result of spherical wave fronts. Now, you can still, in the illustrations I'll show you, you can map the distribution and the intensities of the electric fields within an EM wave, a diamond-shaped EM wave, to spherical wave fronts. And when you put two EM waves side by side and laterally overlap them, you get constructive and destructive interference of the photons, the equilateral triangles. Plus and minus charges cancel out, or plus and plus on top of each other give more amplitude, strengthen the wave formation. All these equilateral geometries are interpreted as spherical wave fronts by Young. Newton saw them as corpuscles or particles of light, which in fact they are. They just happen to be not round balls. They're flat diamonds of energy momenta, electromagnetic energy momenta. And where the other problem that crept in mathematically was Planck described the energy of a EM wave is E equals N dot H nu, the number of Planck quanta. Einstein described the energy of the same wave as E equals HF. Tetrionics in the geometry shows us that even though physicists would say, both simply say the energy is Planck frequency, whether it's H nu or HF, they just use the word frequency. Tetrionics shows us that H nu represents bosons, which are always odd numbers, whereas HF are coupled bosons, neutral photons, so they always appear in even numbers. So there's two bosons to a photon. A frequency is a complete sine wave from positive through to negative back to the beginning of positive. A boson is simply a single charge. It's entirely positive or it's entirely negative. You need two bosons to make a photon. All the geometries of mass create all the properties that we see in the single and double slit experiments. they convey the information, they contain the distribution. If you look at the distribution of the normal diffraction pattern, interference pattern that's produced, it starts at a low, the outer edges are the lowest intensity, building up to a maximum intensity in the center of all the bars that occur. The bars simply occur where the electric fields are hitting the photographic emulsion, or whether they're hitting the photo detector, because the photo detector is not detecting magnetic fields, it's detecting electric. And the same thing with the photographic paper, it's relying on the energy, electric energy momenta, to convert the silver nitrate into a brighter and brighter spot. So all these properties, along with the distribution of those and the spreading of the bars, the difference between them, as you increase the frequency, you get more and more bars because there's more and more Planck quanta within those triangular diamond-shaped fields. As you overlap fields laterally, you'll get constructive and destructive interference, which mimics, which explains fully what Young explained with circular wavefronts. And even if you move the wavefronts so one arrives earlier than the other, you'll still get the same changes in the interference pattern. So the answer to the age-old question, is a photon a wave or a particle, is that it's a geometric particle that's measured to have wave-like properties. And if you want a really crude analogy that would help get your mind around how photons move around and electrons, the electrons in the double slit experiment, think of the electron as a speedboat on a pond, and the photons, or the kinetic energy field around the electron, as the wake of the boat as it moves towards a wall. The wake will go with it. The faster the boat moves, the bigger the wake will be created. If there's a gap in the wall for the boat to pass through, it will pass through, but some of the wake will be stopped by the break wall, and only part of the wake will be able to come through, even though the electron's still moving. And if you were to set up a detector, you would see the boat and some of its wake energy coming through that gap in the break wall, just like how Young interpreted it. And you could say the same analogy for the double slit, except in the double slit you have two breaks in the wall, and the electron, or the boat, is stopped by the barrier between the two slits. Bit hard to go into here, but I will do in the full discussion. You can liken the electron to the boat, and the chem field to the wake, and everything that we observe in the single and double slit experiments that's currently interpreted as being a wave function, or a interference pattern of wave fronts, can now be shown geometrically in tetrionics to be the result of equilateral diamond-shaped photons of energy momenta, either overlapping or being dispersed.
Wonderful. So here we have the invitation to continue this in a sequel and to deepen the insight of what we have already discussed earlier, the relationship between the particle and the wave as it is seen in tetrionics, but now more specifically in the way that that can say something about our own thinking process, because of course our own mind is a generator of these wave fields as well. So then we can connect that to what can we then measure by that methodology of the Young double slit experiment, if we apply what we have already discussed about the Young double slit experiment measurement in the context of the human body as a thinking electromagnetic wave field generator.
Yeah, it's constantly using energy, absorbing food, breaking it down to create energy to establish and maintain this BEM field around the body.
Kelvin, thank you very much. I think this is a good time to round off this recording session. In the first part, I gave an explanation of the way a biological organism like a human is in fact an electromagnetic system. That old cultures, new cultures have already known that. At the moment, there are measurements being done by people such as Dean Radin on how can we assess how our thought processes affect the world around us, and vice versa, of course. And in this case, we connect it up to the way he tries to measure these influences via the Young double and single slit experiment compared. And you've already shown how in tetrionics there is this different foundation by which you can understand everything that has been described in the theory used up till now. There it is formulated as circular waves. In tetrionics it is described in terms of equilateral triangular fields. And as a result of having that detailing of the specific triangular field of the quantum, it is then also clear why people measure a double sinusoidal wave in the detection devices that are being used. So I look forward to continue this exploration of then correlating the Young double slit experiment as a detection tool versus what you're now working towards, the description of what happens in our body, specifically what happens in our mind and our consciousness in terms of the formulations of tetrionics. And in that sense, we are running a bit ahead of where you are now with the books that you are writing.
Okay.
But as the thoughts are already in place, I look forward to that open exploration of it with you in that next time. And as usual, I'd like to ask you to round off the recording session in whichever way you would like to do that.
Okay. Thanks, Otto. As usual, you've wrapped it up pretty nicely. I mean, like, all this will come out in the next lecture and the next discussion where we delve deeply into the single and double slit experiments will inevitably focus around the reinterpretation of the geometry that nature uses, as opposed to the mathematical assumptions that have existed since Newton and Young first started, and even Goethe first started to think deeply about what exactly is this photon, this bundle of light, and what role does it play in not only just electromagnetic fields, but kinetic EM fields and biological EM fields. And as usual, once your brain can absorb it and see how it's producing, how the geometry is producing the results, I hope everyone ends up in a situation where they see it like I do, and it just becomes a self-evident, simple solution to what's hitherto been a very complex problem for physics.
Thank you so much for what we've been able to bring together again, and how you've been able to present tetrionics so that everybody can now use it and understand it.
That's the aim.
Thank you, Kelvin.
Not
to
a
be
problem,
continued.
Otto.